Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to another edition of Global Leader Radio. So today we'll look at the topic of global leadership through the prism of creativity. So with that in mind, we're going to introduce three people overall, two people responsible for helping others produce great results through their efforts in leadership, and the third person has made an Emmy Award-winning mark in the world of journalism, and she's currently restocking her toolkit by focusing on a program that's really zeroed in on global leadership. So we're excited to welcome Alan Schaefer of Banding People Together.
Thanks for having me.
Belinda Hernandez of CNN.
Hello.
And Dean Travellino of Travellino & Keller.
Good afternoon.
Ah, fantastic. So, Alan, we'll start with you. Alan is the founder of Banding People Together. This is a music-based experiential learning program that enhances collaboration through a unique bonding process of songwriting. It's interesting that he uses the unique platform of songwriting to strengthen and bond teams while he also explores personal behavior assessments, organizational development, group dynamics, and other fundamental teaming principles, all in a musically themed setting everybody can relate to. This is incredibly interesting and incredibly creative. So welcome again.
Hey, thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit more about Banding People Together.
Banding People, you know, I have to preface this by saying I've spent the last 10 years touring the world as a front man in a band, and sometimes it is still surreal for me to be having these conversations about leadership, and so I'm really pleased to be here. You know, it was one of these things where I've always been cursed with or blessed with the left brain, right brain thing, mm-hmm. The creative side and the analytical side, process side, and I was having some problems with my band. Imagine that. There were some issues going on.
That happens. Huh?
Can you believe it? No. Can you believe that happened
wow.
in a band? And a buddy of mine who was a CEO of a company called City Search. I was out in Los Angeles, and we were having our sort of L.A. moment, having a nice dinner someplace, and he said he made me think differently about some things, and it just put me on this path of team dynamics.
Hmm.
Yeah, and it was a book in particular, which I'm not going to give away.
But,
and so around the same time, I had learned about this thing in the corporate world called team building I'd never heard of. And I thought, you know, I'm living in the world of music. There's something that can be done here. Maybe I could go into corporate America and teach people how to work together better using songwriting. And I realized that couldn't really do it I couldn't be the band guy just showing up going, hey, everyone, hey, dudes, let's write a song. And so I found that I needed something else that I'd never heard of called an instructional designer.
Ah.
And so it just kind of put me on this path. And what started off as team building turned into collaboration, employee engagement, culture building, organizational development. And I love it.
So now you swerve directly into the human resources, human capital side of academia,
yes.
and then the rest is history, huh?
And like everything else, if you'd have told me that I would be living in this space, I would have said you're crazy, but I love it.
Well, good, good. So obviously it's a very unique approach, and certainly this inspiration was all based on an L.A. moment?
Based on an L.A. moment. Man, that's the next song I'm writing.
So what led you to believe that this actual thought could actually be turned into a venture that could actually make money and really could be viable in the world?
Well, the process itself, and if you've never written a song before, when you collaborate, there's so many things that have to happen for it to work.
Okay.
And when it works, it's just magic. It's like when you're on a good date or something and everything's firing on all cylinders. You know, there's an energy. There's some complexity to it, but it's getting in touch with your creative side, waking up your right brain,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a very unique bonding process. Like personally, I don't write with anybody that I wouldn't hang out with socially. Like that's for me, that's kind of my thing, I just kind of drew from that, and then we put together this when I took a look at the challenges on a leadership level and on a collaboration level in the band dynamic,
mm-hmm.
That's really what fueled this. I mean, this might sound a little dramatic, but this is maybe me sort of righting some of my leadership and collaborative wrongs. I thought I knew what collaboration was. It turns out, and this might be a surprise to everybody, it turns out collaboration is not beating your idea into somebody until they until they give in, even if you do it with a smile. And also, from a leadership level, you know, having people want to contribute. And I think as a leader, being able to identify, you know, the sweet spot of this person and that person, I was trying to make the guys in the band do things they didn't want to do based on what I thought needed to be done. And so maybe a little scarred but smarter.
Well, and certainly I had an ulterior motive for inviting you over today, because you swerve right into our sweet spot at Kennesaw State University's Executive MBA program. Don't know if you know this, but the way we do this is we start people out on an intact domestic team. And so it's made up of five, six, or seven people. And you cannot change teams throughout your whole matriculation in the program.
Wow.
So it's a five-semester program, and certainly Belinda will talk a little bit more about that. And some of the things that you're talking about swerves right into her, some of her conversation, some of her experiences, and the things she's seen today. So collaboration, partnership, teaming, communication, all of those aspects that have to really take place in order for sweet music to be made on the teaming side.
And, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because I have, as we've discussed, I have a deep history with Kennesaw State's MBA program, and I was probably not the best collaborator the first time around, even though we were able to have some success. I was, my twin brother and I had a .com called tourdates.com back in 1994 we launched, and we sold to a company called Launch Media that got bought by Yahoo in 2000.
Wow.
And it was the MBA program, we got taken under the wing. It was an entrepreneurship class, and they wrote a business plan for us, and they really challenged us. They really stretched us. And it was this, when I look back on it now, it was a very interesting collaborative effort, because there were these two young guys that thought we knew everything, clearly didn't. And they turned our business model upside down. We thought they were crazy for a minute. And it's what saved our business.
Ah, but you did commit. And the bottom line is, once you commit, you trusted.
We did commit. And we had to do something that we actually talk about in our workshops now. Something very, very difficult. It's called killing your darlings. You ever heard of that expression?
Haven't heard of it.
So, you know, it's being able to let go of a certain idea so it can evolve into what it's supposed to be. And the darling that we had to kill was the only revenue that we had going on at the time, we were selling these home pages to bands. And they'd pay $100, and it would give. And this was before everybody in a band could make their own web page or knew somebody that could do a web page for them. And they came to us and they said, we have an idea. It's a pretty radical idea. I said, okay. I said, we think you should give away the home pages. I flipped out. I'm like, this is the only money we're making, and we're hanging on by a thread. And it really took every fiber of our being to be able to work through that and let go of what we thought it was supposed to be. And we were just so close to it, and we lost perspective. And we had the wisdom and benefit of these people in the MBA program that had a lot more experience than us. Look and go, you got to let go of this. And as soon, once we let go of that, we evolved into a company that was thriving in terms of content licensing.
Wow!
So then all of a sudden, we went from selling $100 home pages to having licensing deals with AOL, MTV, Cox Interactive, AT&T. And so it was a big deal. As a matter of fact, back in the day, at the NASDAQ International Business Plan Competition, where we went out with the whole team, we finished second, and one of the judges, I said to him, I said, why did we finish second? Our plan, you said our plan was so great. He said, it's your product. This internet thing is a fad.
And when was this again? What year was this?
This was 1995, 1996, something like that.
Wow, incredible how things have changed.
Yeah.
So let's rewind a bit. So tell us exactly what happens in a workshop at banding people together.
So in a workshop, we start off with a musical performance just to let people know that, hey, this is going to be something different. And it's very interesting. I feel bad saying how much I enjoy this next part of the process, but then we let everybody know that we're going to be exploring collaboration. The way that we're going to do it is that everyone's going to be writing an original song, and this air just gets sucked out of the room. I mean, silent. People start fidgeting. The body language changes. Clearly uncomfortable. And that's very much by design, because ultimately, you know, we have a tendency to collaborate with those who are like-minded and who are comfortable with, but that's in the strive for innovation, in the strive for change, we like to suggest that you have to put yourself in the spot to where you're uncomfortable, and that's where some of the greatest stuff comes from. But we don't always like to do that.
That's right.
And so then, depending on what our clients are trying to accomplish, you know, sometimes there's a change management piece involved to what we do. Sometimes it's purely just to get a conversation started around collaboration. Mm-hmm. We have a platform called Five Part Harmony, and it's kind of explores what a band needs to function at their highest collective potential. And it's trust and communication, accountability, united purpose, collaboration. We have different musical engagement exercises around those sort of things.
Interesting. So, I mean, everything that you're saying falls perfectly in line with the things we teach at Kennesaw State
That's
University's
fantastic.
MBA program. What's interesting about it truly is that you talk about making sure that you don't bring people together that are just like you.
Yes.
So, which is homogeneity, and certainly we want them to be heterogeneous. Right? We want to make sure that they're not like us. They utilize different skills, different functions, play different roles, et cetera. And certainly if we've got five bass players, we don't have a band, do we?
Right.
Five drummers, no band.
Right.
So you got to make sure that everything is distributed equally and everybody pulls their weight. So when you talk about what you're doing with some of the great organizations today, you have worked with some great organizations in the past, right?
We've been very, very fortunate. We've worked with Microsoft, ESPN, Novellus, General Reinsurance, Sony, Hard Rock, and it's really kind of blown me away. It's starting to take off, and we've got a great team. I feel like we work really, really hard, even in our small organization. We have, I think, about at 13 or 14 trainers altogether.
Okay.
And we really try to walk the collaborative walk. You know,
okay.
Everything that we teach people, we are very hardcore about doing. So there's no conversation that we can't have with each other, and we get brutally, brutally honest. And we have been very, very good, I think, at leveraging our differences. And that's a real challenge in the band environment. It's a real challenge in any teaming environment.
Yeah, that's a key criteria, of course. But, you know, teams as far as bands are a lot different in what I've noticed based on the research. And, you know, you've got a lot more factors to deal with. You've got travel. You've got, you know, late hours, early hours. You got people going off doing their own things. And I guess that's why you have sound checks, right?
Yes, that's why you have sound checks.
make sure everybody comes together and talks about it. So banding people together, are you primarily based in Atlanta, or you do work and engagements nationwide, globally?
We do them globally. We've done them as far as Shanghai,
okay,
which was a very interesting challenge, especially from a leadership perspective. Over in China, it's not common to challenge the boss.
Mm.
And so that was one of the things that we had to get people to agree. They looked at us like we were crazy to be able to say, hey, look, if the CEO comes up with a line and you don't like it, or you have something that you want to add to it, you need to be able to do that. And that was the first thing that we had to get everybody to do. It was kind of mind-blowing, but it was great.
It worked out well.
It worked out well. But we travel everywhere. As a matter of fact, we're hoping to do more in Atlanta, but 95% of what we do is everywhere else.
Someplace else. Interesting. Well, you know, we're in the room. We've got five people in our room. Four of them will be on air. It's just a small conversation between four friends with a couple million people listening in. That's
Love
what
it.
We always say.
Love
so,
it.
So as a leader, how can someone help facilitate more collaboration within their own work team or organization?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it takes one person to start a collaborative revolution.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we think. And in the music game, you know, when you go to make a record, if you've heard of a record producer, so you go into the studio and there's this producer that's supposed to help you make the best record you can make. And there's two types of producers. There's what we call the producer, and there's the reducer.
Mm.
The reducer is the producer that when you go in, if you don't play what they want to take the guitar out of your hands and play it for you.
Interesting.
They want to shape you into something that they think you should be instead of what maybe you really are meant to be. And it's a tough process. What a great producer does is they set the stage. They set the stage for a great collaborative environment. They make sure that everybody understands the role that they play. They help everyone. They challenge people in a way that they get to their potential, that they can get to a place that they didn't know that they had. So, you know, I've worked with producers that say, you need to change that line, and they want to write the line for you. And then I've got other ones that have thrown me in a room and locked the door and said, you're not coming out until you give us this line that we know you're capable of giving. And those are, but ultimately, they create a great environment for collaboration. And I think as a leader, that's our job, is to create this environment where everyone feels like they know how they fit into the whole, where, you know, where they feel like they're contributing, and they have the space to go for it, and to create this environment of vulnerability. You know, that's where the greatness happens.
Yeah, and they also feel like they're valued.
Yes.
What they've contributed is somebody's really taking a listen to it and really focusing on it and melding it with whatever else needs to be done, right?
Right, but nobody in the history of greatness ever played it safe.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to be able to take chances.
Yeah, you know, when you were saying the reducer, it made me think of micromanagers.
Yes.
It really sounds a lot like that, right? So do companies send their high potential talent to work with your firm one-to-one, or do they send teams of people to work with you? Or how does that actually work? How do people engage?
It really varies. So we have a few, we have some clients that we work with that once they identify high potentials, they bring them into the home office or the mothership, you know, three times a year, four times a year. And in what we found is, or what our clients have found is that beyond the collaborative training, just the very nature of what we do in the beginning of their training process kind of gets everyone comfortable and open and vulnerable and uncomfortable and comfortable again and communicating in a way that makes a real impact on the rest of the training that happens.
Okay.
Especially when you're bringing in people who don't necessarily work together on an intact team.
Ah, okay. So you can perhaps even get the three of us, for example, to come over, and then you'll put us on a team.
Yes.
And then we can work together. So do any of us have to be musically inclined other than singing in the shower?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Woo!
And I think that's the thing that scares people. But yes, we, you know, our facilitators, we call them band leaders, they are just rock stars and great at engaging people and making people feel comfortable and guiding them through that process. Yeah,
well, fantastic. I love that. So we're going to put a push pin in our conversation, and we're going to pivot over to Belinda Hernandez. Mm. She's an Emmy Award-winning journalist and a current student at the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. So how are you?
I am doing excellent. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Well, good. I know that you're a Louisiana native, and you love Louisiana sports. So give us the current state of affairs with regard to that quickly.
You know, I look at it like this from a business perspective and risk aversion. I think we should just come in last. I mean, you know, we're right in the middle of the bounty punishment, right?
You're talking
about
the Saints.
There's no coach, right? Mm-hmm. Talking about the New Orleans Saints. My theory is, you know what? Just take it easy. Protect Drew Brees. Don't do anything that's risky. Wait till we get our team back. Come in last place. Get the first round draft pick. Then we come back full force with the coach, the staff, all of our players. We're in a win-win situation.
And go after the next crown, right? Mm-hmm.
And I love them no matter what. Good, bad, till death do us part. So, yes, I'm a diehard.
Well, good. So tell us a little bit about Belinda Hernandez and your actual move within the CNN ranks, because you obviously were in front of the camera at one point, and now you're looking more at the business side.
Early on, I'll just give you a brief little history. Early on in my career, I did do some on-air work, and then the bug bit to where I wanted to be the writer, producer, the person who crafted it. There's that left brain, right brain, that creative side. I love telling the story. So then I spent most of my career as a producer, managing editor, executive producer, and then Hurricane Katrina happened in New Orleans. I was in local news. CNN opened the bureau. I was managing the staff in that bureau for a couple of years, and then the job brought me to Atlanta and still doing the editorial thing. And then the opportunity came to make the transition to the business side of the business. There's ad sales. There's my division, which is news source sales and affiliate relations. We provide and sell content to clients. Mm-hmm. So the stuff that you see on CNN's air, the live shots, the video, now we're in the wire business with text and photos. Everybody's going digital, so it's for multi-platform. So I am part of a team that manages a base of clients domestically here, right around 900 affiliates.
Okay.
So it's a lot of TV stations and combined some newspapers and some radio stations in there that are our clients.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've interviewed several in the healthcare field in my role as the business development manager and one who makes certain that we get the right people in the program. So I've interviewed several in the healthcare field who really want to move from the clinical side of healthcare to the business side. So you're doing a similar thing in your genre of journalism. So what sparked your desire to transition to the business side of journalism?
A couple things. I had done the journalism side for 20-plus years. Okay. A couple of the really big stories that I covered in my hometown was, of course, Hurricane Katrina. And then the last journalism side, last job on that side is I covered the 2008 election, which was historic.
Interesting.
And I had always thought about making that transition. I was always curious about, well, how do we keep feeding the beast, so to speak? You know, what's the operation side like? What's the revenue generating side like? And the opportunity presented itself. What helped me is I was on the local affiliate level for all those years as in New Orleans. So I was an end user of CNN's product. So I, as a young producer, used to use CNN content to write my newscast. So it came full circle. And I think that was really one thing that gave me an advantage to land in this current position that I have. So I can now go to talk to clients and speak their lingo. I know what some of their needs might be, help them isolate some problems, find solutions to their problems. So the transition for me, it's always been a natural curiosity. And I think, to my knowledge, there is a void out there in broadcasting as far as on the collegiate level. There's broadcasting, then there's business, but there's not any particular one course on how to run the business of broadcasting, or media, I should say. Because now, you know, digital, it's basically all one. So there's a big void out there. There might be like a...
Be an opportunity.
That's what
huh?
I'm saying. Right?
Love opportunities. Yeah, yeah. So then you decided, okay, I'm going to go back and really work on my toolkit and make certain that I can handle the business side and it makes sense to me. I can talk the parlance, the taxonomy, is something that I can really sit down and chat with people about revenues, et cetera. So what were some of the decision points to help you make an informed decision about which program would work best for you?
And that's a great question because when the bug first bit, when I first realized, yes, I have this incredible job on the business side of what we do, but how can I improve my skills? And I knew eventually it would be the MBA, the executive MBA. Looked at a few programs here. What led me to where I am currently in Kennesaw State's executive MBA program is Alvin did a great job recruiting. Such a good recruiter.
But
seriously, he is. A couple things, and that's a great question. I mean, for somebody, anybody out there who might be considering it, and I have people in my, you know, at Turner who ask me about it, and I keep pointing them your way, so hopefully they'll reach out to you. Mm-hmm. So what you need to consider are several things. What you want to fit in your schedule, right? We meet every 3 weeks, I believe, and there are some programs that are every other weekend. I didn't think that fit for my schedule. The teaming aspect, you said so many things that were spot on about what makes a good functioning band, and I think that can transcend into the world of business, on the football field, anything that takes a group of people. The collaboration thing was so right on what we are learning in the teaming aspect of it. Cost was part of the reason why, and the international component. So all those things combined, but the teaming that I am learning from this is, it's invaluable to me. I am absolutely using a lot of the skills that I'm learning, the so-called softer skills as compared to the business acumen, today at work. And it's benefited me, I can't even put a value on it.
Well, I love the way you position that with soft skills versus hard skills. You know, we always focus on the interpersonal side to really see the differentiators. And so I would dare say that, and I'll ask you real quickly, Alan, as I pivot back to you, when you see companies sending people over to banding people together, is it the business acumen that they want them to learn more about, or is it more about the interpersonal skills they want them to get better versed in?
It's definitely the soft skills.
Okay.
And you know, when we started, the soft skills were one of those things that kind of got dismissed a lot, and that's becoming more and more important because a lot of the challenges that we have in the teaming environment, they're not business problems, they're people problems.
Mm-hmm. 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 Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So Belinda, as an MBA now, how have you transformed in your thinking, in your behaving, and in your performance?
Always looking at something from the bigger picture first. Right. Always looking a step ahead of potential problems to try to offset those. Mm-hmm. And learning, but understanding now how to work in a matrix organization where I have to cross collaborate. It's not all about when you're on the editorial side. It's, okay, just give me the live shots, give me the video, and that's it. That's my world in this box.
Yeah.
So now it's much more broad, and I have the skill set now to collaborate with people in different departments to do my job effectively, whether it's dealing with a client and trying to problem solve, creating new products that we can bring to our clients.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's I think, benefited me more on that bigger, higher view, 30,000-foot view.
So as a business person with CNN, you certainly see yourself as a problem solver with regard to your constituents.
Sure, absolutely. I have a client base of over 100, and it's growing, and I have to always be on to help them solve problems. Absolutely.
Okay, well, good. So we'll pause again with you, and we'll step over to Dean Travellino. He's the co-founder of Travellino / Keller. And I put the / in there. It just sounded good.
/ is good.
And after 15 years with some of the best public relations firms in the world, including two stints with his partner, Jenna Keller, Dean set out to establish a great boutique firm in 2003, one recognized for strategic thinking and creative programming. So Travellino Keller is a PR firm that defines itself as a cross between food and tech, lifestyle and innovation. That's novel, isn't it?
It's a little novel, but, you know, there are a lot of agencies that have a lot of practices. Uh-huh. When we started the firm in 2003, we started at a time when, the market was still reeling from the tech burst.
Okay.
And so we knew from the beginning that what we didn't want to do was be purely tech. That was risky.
Okay.
Even though that was our heritage, okay. Even though that there was essentially a leveling of the playing field in the Southeast with technology firms or multinational agencies that had tech offices. Hmm. They just closed them down quickly over those couple of years. But nevertheless, we wanted to be more than that. So we started with three practices initially: tech, B2B, and lifestyle. And we have morphed over the years, partly based on what we see in the market and partly based on our own interests, right? We own the company, so we can get to decide.
Do
we don't
like.
Have to call New York or London and ask for approval. And so, one day we decided that we wanted to get into green and not just clean tech, but anything that was environmental or sustainable or locally sourced. And so we launched a green practice. We didn't do it because we thought it was going to drive our revenue up. It was just something we wanted to do.
Okay.
And we knew we could be patient about its growth. And it's been a great practice. It's been fun. We've gotten to launch an electric car company that was locally created here in Atlanta in Midtown. Launched it at Georgia Tech a few years back. So from there, beyond green, we were doing a lot of franchising work.
Okay.
And decided that that business was kind of living in our broader lifestyle practice. And so we pulled it out, gave it its own identity. And we've had an opportunity to work with a lot of great franchise concepts. A lot of them came out of Atlanta, but, our reputation has grown. And so we get calls from, companies all over the country. We work today with TCBY out of Salt Lake, more recently moved to Denver, but, a brand that pioneered a category.
And that's
so,
right.
But had kind of become a sleeping giant.
Hmm.
And that's a great place for us to be. We like working with companies that, have that kind of legacy and heritage, but, we can make a real impact in kind of bringing them back and making them relevant again.
Because you certainly have something to work with, obviously.
We got a lot to work with.
Yeah.
And, they're an innovator. And so as they innovate, It gives us a platform to, to make some noise and show that they're relevant again.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about Dean. Who is Dean Travolino? A little bit about your background.
Yeah. So I'm a transplant, like a lot of other folks here, right? I came from Philadelphia.
Okay.
I knew it. Eagles. Pats or Geno's.
Yeah, it's a tough weekend.
I think you're our next one up in the queue. Saints Eagles.
Tough weekend. We are going to, well, hopefully we'll do a little better than the Atlanta beating we took. But yeah, I grew up in, South Philadelphia and from there I went to Penn State as an undergraduate, and then from there to the University of Alabama for graduate school.
Really?
And first day I got to the university, everyone was very nice at Alabama. I had my Pennsylvania license plate on the back of my car. I woke up the next morning and they had crumpled it into a ball to welcome me. But It was a great experience, and that was kind of my orientation to the South. And so I went back up to Philly, finished my thesis, and I landed a job here in Atlanta. Wasn't even looking, had never been to Atlanta, but landed a job here, and that was 23 years ago.
So how did you originally move from Pennsylvania to Alabama? Was that a conscious choice or a scholarship?
No, it wasn't on my radar. In fact, the things that we used to say about that rivalry were not so
we're not positive. Air-worthy, right?
We can't say that's right. That. Although it actually is an amazing rivalry. The respect for both schools is somewhat unprecedented. But I had a great friend growing up. Went to school with him. His father was from Birmingham.
Okay.
He went to Alabama. None of his kids did. And so he did all the paperwork for me, came to me and said, "Hey, I got you an assistantship if you want to take it."
It's kind of hard to beat.
And money was tight, and so I jumped at it. Had never been to the university. First day there was my first day enrolled.
Interesting. So you leave there, and then you finish up back in Pennsylvania, you said?
Finished my thesis in Pennsylvania. Sent out resumes and high-tech PR firm in Atlanta, Penn State alumni. Who actually wrestled. I wrestled at Penn State. He liked that.
Okay.
That was all he needed to see.
That was good enough,
that
right?
That was my first job, yeah.
And so then we fast forward to, you coming together with Jenna.
Yep.
I think it's Jenna.
Yeah, yes.
And you formed this firm. So was it a gathering of friends or people you had worked with before? How do you put the firm together?
It was, it was a leap of faith. To just go out and do it. Jen and I talked about it briefly, and we felt like in 2003, for the first time in our careers, we had kind of lost control of our destiny.
Okay.
And so that was not a comfortable feeling. And
okay.
So I just decided, this was the thing to do, to go out and try to start a firm, even though it was the last thing I ever wanted to do. My father had his own, design business, and I saw what he went through. I had no interest in doing this. But, when push comes to shove, I had to do it. So, I left. I did everything above board, and then I had people call and say, "Hey, I'd love to be a part of this." And I said, "Great." And so we've got some people with us now that, have literally grown up with us from the time they were interns, 16, 17, 18 years ago. And so it's made for a great nucleus. We're coming up on 10 years.
Wow.
We're one of the 30 best firms to work for in North America.
I saw that. Congratulations.
Never lost a person to an agency since we started. So, it's not difficult to create, a great environment, when you listen to people and you understand what it is that motivates them. And you just, you work hard to give them that and they'll stay.
Okay, because what we're doing here is we're having a nice small conversation, just for a few friends here with about 2 million people listening in. So Global Leader Radio is really focused on ideas that matter, and we're talking with people who really care and are passionate about what they do. And I think you hear that between Alan, Belinda, and Dean. So Dean, as we kind of move forward the conversation with you, so tell us a little bit about the role of public relations and how you've seen that change over the last 3 to 5 years.
Sure. I think to some extent it's changed because companies have had to, right? I mean, it's no longer an agency representing a company and trying to help them interface better with the media. You know, social media has just changed the landscape. You know, anyone who's got access to a phone or a computer has a voice, and they didn't have that before. So whether you like it or not, you've got to change the way you think, the way you work, the tools you use. And so today, you know, we define ourselves more as a, you know, public relations, social media agency. Now, you know, those are kind of the tools that, you know, that we, you know, we think about, that we leverage. But, you know, there's still a large portion of the marketplace that is thinks very traditionally. They think I've got to get as much attention in the media as I can. And the media isn't going anywhere. You know, some of it's digital now, but it's still not going anywhere. And, you know, people talk about things like, I've got to help my client tell their story, and I've got to get them recognition, I've got to help them build their brand. And, you know, those things are all important. But from our point of view, and I think this is one of the things that does differentiate us a little bit, is that we think the emphasis needs to be on reputation.
Interesting.
We think that if you're the, you know, if you're the CEO of an organization and reputation isn't keeping you up at night, then you know you're not at the top of your game, because it can go very quickly.
Interesting.
Whether that's an employee who's, you know, taken a video and gone viral with something that doesn't make your company look so favorable. Or, you know, you've just had a product recall and everyone is, you know, online bantering about it. You know, great companies, you know, can weather stuff like that. I mean, if you look at Apple, for example, great brand, number 5th in, you know, rankings as far as reputation goes. They did a pretty good job weathering a really bad app mm-hmm. that came out on the iPhone 5. If they were a startup company with an app like that, they would not have weathered it. But their reputation is so stellar that they can, in fact, bounce back from that. So, you know, we just think that it's all about reputation today. And, you know, not all companies are created equal. So whether you're – if you've been around a while, that helps. Mm-hmm. If you're private, that helps. Public companies are, you know, more scrutinized. The larger they are, the more –
susceptible.
People you've got to worry about. Mm-hmm. If you're a consumer play versus a B2B play, you know, you're even more vulnerable, right?
Wow.
Industries have an impact, right? If you're in the financial sector today, you start out already with a bad reputation.
Hmm.
Now, that's changing, but, you know, the financial services space has taken a hit over the last few years since the recession. So that means you're associate, you know, by association, you know, you've got a negative connotation. You can work around that, and that's, you know, that's why you call agencies
like you,
like us,
damage control,
right? To help you, you know, kind of rebuild. Sometimes you're helping to rebuild the individual company. Sometimes you're helping to rebuild the industry itself.
Okay, well, interesting conversation. I'd love you to kind of step a little bit outside of what you normally do and translate what you just said to a more personal level. So is there any advice for the people that are listening to this program on how to use the public relations mindset to manage their own careers and their own personal brands?
Yeah. You know, interesting enough, my thesis was a little bit on you know, how you position yourself as an individual to establish credibility, right?
Okay.
And ultimately, that's, you know, that's to get a job, right? To get advanced in your career and
or get more business,
be able to negotiate things like that. So, you know, I think everyone, you know, it's in everyone's best interest to think of themselves, you know, like a company, right? They've got their own reputation, and the things that you do as an individual goes a long way in the kinds of, you know, the way you're perceived, right? So, you know, people who are, you know, generous, who get involved in, you know, volunteer programs, community outreach, those are ways that you build your reputation, right? Mm-hmm. You're a high school kid looking to get into college. What do? Right? You should have been a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout. You should have volunteered. You should, you know, have great grades, right? But it's more than just grades, right? So that's all those things build your reputation as an individual.
So you're looking at the total person.
The total person. And, you know, when people come to us, we have something we call an interview camp. We do it, you know, about every quarter. And we just dedicate the day. There's usually 10 slots. Hmm. And, you know, first come, first serve, grab your slot and you come in. And, you know, it's a little American Idol-ish. We're there to give you real-time feedback. And, you know, it's not meant to be, you know, harsh or demotivating. It's meant to be frank and, you know, help you, you know, go down the right path to ultimately landing a job. And so, you know, we're looking at the kinds of decisions that people have made or not made, whether that's internships or volunteering, you know, just, you know, not just blowing off summers to go travel. I mean, travel's great, but do it with some purpose.
Got it. Interesting. That's some very good information. So, Dean, is there a direct measurable correlation between a company's success and ultimately what you love to be able to focus on, which is its reputation?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are there's definitely things that you can look at, right? Everyone wants to talk about measurement when they talk about our industry. Mm-hmm. And again, this notion of generating media attention, you know, that's all well and fine, but you know, we see a direct correlation between reputation and things like talent, right? Mm-hmm. No one wants to go work for a company with a lousy reputation.
Right.
And so it becomes increasingly difficult and expensive to get great talent if you don't have that strong reputation. Once you do, you know, then you as the employer are in the driver's seat. And, you know, we're already at a point now where people are negotiating. It's on the West Coast. It'll make its way to the East Coast where potential, you know, candidates have the you know, the ability to negotiate for perks and things like that, which, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, everyone was saying just, you know, I'll work for food. you know, that's changed quickly. You know, so talent is a big, you know, is a big way to measure, you know, the importance of reputation. You know, even sales, right? I mean, the lower the reputation, the more money you've got to spend on lead generation, right?
Yes.
Strategic partnerships. You know, companies are very mindful of the company they keep. Mm-hmm. And so if your reputation is down, it's going to be tougher to develop things like strategic partnerships, investment. You know, investors don't like to invest money in companies that, you know, where the reputation is not great or where there's not a whole lot of product innovation.
Okay.
And then, you know, all that boils up to profit, right? The more money you're spending dealing with some of these issues, putting out fires, the less you're spending on, you know, generating profit.
Absolutely. So, Alan, when you think about the high potential talent that companies send to you to work with, are you seeing a trend perhaps that these are companies that have a great reputation and are looking to get better, or are these companies that really want to shore things up and try to help themselves even get even better than where they are today?
I think it's a little bit of both, but okay. The one thing that we see across the board is, like, ultimately our clients are companies that actually believe in investing in their people.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a simple idea, but man, there's a few different types of people up in the C-suite, and some of them look at this stuff, all this soft skills, touchy-feely stuff. You know, it's ultimately, as to what you were talking about, it's the culture, the reputation, it affects everything.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's trying to get the best out of their people. Everybody's trying to get the best talent. And so, you know, creating that environment is so important.
Yeah, man, that's important with regard to reputation, obviously, too. So reputation and collaboration, have you seen perhaps all three of you, this is for all of you, have you seen a correlation between reputation and collaboration? And I'll start with you, Dean. Have you seen a correlation between those two?
Well, I think, you know, companies or entities, individuals that are interested in collaboration,
okay,
they just have better reputations,
right?
You know, the person who is very successful at selling, you know, deploys a lot of tools. The person who isn't, you know, cries that, you know, you're not giving me enough help. But, you know, more often it's just because they're just not working hard enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, people who are into collaboration, you know, they just have great, you know, reputations. And so, you know, we have initiatives. We've got a thing called the Startup Council. We launched it several years ago, and it's made up of individuals who bring a different skill set to the table that's relevant to a startup company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're there from a public relations standpoint, but we've got, you know, practitioners from HR, legal, outsourced manufacturing, business development, and their, you know, their reputations are all fantastic, and they're all coming to the table on a gratis, you know, setup to help, you know, startup companies.
Gratis setup is pretty strong. Pro bono is always a very strong hook. So, Belinda, when you think about the assignments that are necessary to get through in the program, and you've got to be able to work with people, and people have got to be able to understand each other, can you recall perhaps in your experience in the program that there was a period of time where you didn't, as a team, your team didn't quite work as well as it does today?
Absolutely. I take it back to the very early weeks when we went through the phases of teaming, which is the storming, the forming, the norming, and the high-performing. Some of our teams I've seen, you know, I've heard program people that have gone through the program before me, and then you see a team every now and again are somewhat stuck in that storming phase. And fortunately, you know, the team that I'm on, considered a really good team, we're in that high performing phase. And then again, I can take what I am learning in that teaming setting and apply it to my real world work, where, okay, how can we overcome this storming phase? This is a new unit put together. It's a new team on a project, whatever it might be. What do we need to do to overcome to get it to those phases to ultimately you're high performing? So, yeah, I can definitely see it. And you know, the tools that I have learned through the course of just the last 12 months, 13 months almost in the program, utilizing today.
Very good. Alan, when you think through all the work and people you've worked with now, you've been banding people together. It's been around how long now?
2 years.
Two years.
Yes.
So do you ever get any testimonials that talk about how great we're doing as a result of having been with you?
Yes. We've been very fortunate to have a lot of happy clients that we very proudly display on the website. ultimately, we're teaching self-awareness. You know, we teach this thing called the collaborative mindset. And when you're in the collaborative mindset, you know, everyone says they're open-minded. Everyone thinks they're a team player.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Usually the people that are the loudest about it are usually
the ones that need the most help.
The ones that need the most help. And so this, you know, this idea of the collaborative mindset where, you know, you're open to the possibility that every interaction that you have has the potential to be a collaborative moment. And it's just a different way of thinking. And so collaboration, you know, it's a simple idea, but it's a complex process. And the complexity comes from the differences. Like on these different teams that, you know, at Kennesaw.
The strengths, too, come from the differences.
Absolutely. And you need all of it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think, you know, it's interesting. It takes, I heard someone say it takes tremendous, tremendous effort to really get to a place of truly understanding somebody else's different perspective. I mean, and we're not always willing to make the effort. But that's ultimate, like, not to go back to the band analogy, but that's what those differences create the sound.
Yeah, yeah. And the band analogy is most apropos with regard to teams because, I mean, when the sound comes out, that is the true measure. That is the result of it all, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it has to be right. And if it's not, of course, the gumbo doesn't taste just like my mother put it together.
Right, right.
You know, my mother loves the gumbo stuff. So I'll tell you that what you're saying is that this whole thing around teaming, people claim that they're good at teams when they don't really understand what it is. People really think they understand collaboration without knowing what it is. And like my mother would always say, son, common sense is really not that common.
Right.
You think through that's pretty interesting stuff. So Belinda, tell us a little bit more about your EMBA experience and how it's helped to make you a little bit more rounded person.
Just coming off of what these two gentlemen are saying, the thing about collaboration for me, I realize in the teaming there's different learning styles. From taking all of these profiles through the course, and in one profile, I am an activator. I'm the type of person who wants to jump in, roll your sleeves up. You know, let's not even worry about the directions. Let's just start trying to figure it out. And then there are the types who are the reflectors who want to sit and think about it. It has taught me, and it's opened a whole new world to really be mindful of other people's learning styles, that it's not always, you know, not everybody wants to jump in and do it right away or might have, you know, let's look at it from a different angle. So it's really opened my mind tremendously. And I've managed people before. I've managed a newsroom before of, you know, 30, 40 people. So, thought you knew about personalities, this really opened my mind to just the learning different styles. And then that whole, we were saying about the strength, it's the differences that make us strong, that make us what we are. I mean, I look at the team that I'm on today, and we are so radically different. I don't know if that was by design or by chance that you guys put us together.
Absolutely by design.
But they put us on a team where it's all these different personalities, and you can either clash or have a common goal to, using a sports analogy, to get the ball from here to over that goal line. And what is it going to take to get it over that goal line? And so, definitely learning the skills. Not learning. I keep saying learning. I have learned those skills. Yeah. It's opened my eyes to it for sure.
You've owned those skills.
On our team?
Absolutely. You own those skills.
We do have a really good team, yeah.
So, we talked a lot about the teams, and we talked a little bit about sports earlier today as well. So, Dean, I'd love to ask you a quick question. So how would you build a communication strategy that's focused on reputation?
Yeah, that's a couple ways. Again, you got to factor in the company, where they are in their life cycle, the kinds of products that they focus on, who their audience is. You take all that into consideration. And then, from at least our approach, we look at it in three kind of buckets. You've got to protect the brand. Mm-hmm. You've got to protect that reputation. And so there are certain services that we deploy based on that strategy, right? So things like, social media monitoring and crisis plans. And crisis plans today need to take into consideration, the world of social media, right? And then you've got what we call kind of the preserving the reputation approach. And, that takes into things that are more legacy oriented, community relations programs and corporate citizenship. Things that, the community can see and touch and know that you're giving back. And then the third piece is really more around promoting the reputation. And that's a little bit more of the traditional stuff. That's going to be a media relations strategy, right? You roll out products. Who are you going to that kind of tell that story? That's things like analyst relations and, getting the executive team out there and, demonstrating that you're kind of an expert. So those are kind of the three buckets that we draw from, and then there are different services under those.
To build a communication strategy based on a reputation. So I would think that, banding people together certainly has a good reputation in the marketplace. How do you communicate to clients and to your satisfied customers as well as to people that you're looking to get involved and really understand what you do?
We've been we've kind of flown under the radar, mm-hmm. and it's really been very, it's kind of the opposite of everything that I ever did in the band. So when you have a band, you just want to go out and hype, and tell the world, check out my band, man, we're the greatest, we're going to change the world. But we've really kind of, we've just been, kind of in and out of the lab, so to speak, tweaking, evolving, developing, and getting to a place to where we feel we're ready to scale. And so it's really just been, happy clients telling other people, and that's really how we've done it. We've been pretty lucky that way.
Well, that's good. And I would think that when you sat down and thought about putting this company together, were you focused on vision and mission first, or were you just kind of looking at a gap and you saying, okay, we can fill this gap? Kind of walk us through perhaps what your thinking was, if it came together that way.
Well, what really drove it was this idea that I was doing all these things wrong in the band environment, and then sort of the metaphor relative to leadership in the collaborative environment.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, man, I thought I had my act together, and I was the one that was actually creating this less than great dynamic. And so, part of it is really wanting, as hokey as it might sound, I'm pretty passionate about kind of having other people learn from the mistakes that I made. And so, I don't think we had any great huge vision or mission statement other than we wanted to help people think differently about collaboration, and that kind of evolved into we want to help people be able to establish and maintain a collaborative environment. Because ultimately, you spend more time at work than you do with your families in many cases. And so the difference between, you know, a really good conversation at the dinner table in the evening or not is how was your day and what did that environment look like?
Yeah, very, very good thought and approach. Dean, what are you passionate about?
What am I passionate about? It's a good question. And it, you know, it evolves, right? It should evolve, I think, for people because you pick up different interests as you go, right? You know, I guess, you know, work is important. That's, you know, that's my livelihood. It's my name on the door. It's what helps me, you know, finance things like school for my son. And so, you know, I'm passionate about getting a check every month and being able to pay the bills. But, you know, I've always been very competitive, and so my latest passion is running. I picked that up after I couldn't wrestle anymore in college, and more recently, there's a great ultra running movement in the country. In fact, there was a great article today's Wall Street Journal about the age of marathon runners now is trending older, 50 plus. And, you know, I believe that, you know, for someone who's into running, you know, 50 plus is the new 30. I mean, because we just didn't have people 20 years ago running marathons and even in their 30s like we do today. So,
and the equipment's gotten better, too, thank goodness.
You know, everything's gotten better. The roads haven't gotten any better. But,
but the shoes have gotten better.
Which is why, you know, a lot of ultra running is off-road. But, you know, ultra relays are actually a great bonding experience. I just did one out in Napa a couple weeks back, 200 miles.
Wow!
Six runners. You run through the night until you finish from Napa to Calistoga, and so, you know, you're up 24-30 hours just running and you know, handing off from one person to the other, and it's a great experience. So now I'm addicted to it. I've got two more lined up in the next 6 months or so. So that's what my wife would say. That's my passion now is running, running.
Ultra running. Belinda?
I am a runner also. I do all three sports when I'm not in school, but everything's on hold right now. I'm actually a certified spinning instructor, which is on hold because of school, and so I miss that. But I've done a couple 26.2s, but not an ultra yet. So my hat's off to you, and I agree with what you say. 50 is definitely the new 30. And I remember reading an article and I think it was Triathlete Magazine, where the best endurance athletes are middle-aged because they have the mental fortitude and focus to dedicate the time and the wherewithal to get through those 8-10 hour races. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. And aside from that, of course, you know, work. I love broadcasting. It's what I studied in my undergraduate degree, and love how fast it's changing with technology. And, you know, we use a lot with social media, not just in marketing, but to do news gathering as well. So, you know, whenever something bubbles up from that organic level, you know, it tips you off that, hey, this might be a story working. So, yeah, I mean, I just love the broadcast industry and where it's everything's really merging. You know, the internet's merging with television and newspapers, or some of them are going away, and everybody's going into the digital space. So I just love the industry right now.
Ah, that sounds very good. So, Dean, I've been dying to ask you this question. Is there ever such a thing as bad publicity?
You know, I think if you asked that question a few years ago, I'd be a little more confident in saying, no, not really.
Okay.
But today, yeah, there's definitely such a thing as bad publicity. I mean, there's the kind of publicity out there that can just absolutely devastate companies. And it, you know, it's because of the way it can spread, right? Whereas before, you know, you can get something that you know, people may not have fully appreciated how negative whatever was being covered was, right? Its impact on that company. They got the headline, and what they walked away with in all the distractions was the brand name. And so that's why people said, oh, bad publicity is even, you know, is good publicity, because the name got out there.
Right.
But now the meat of the story and the reason why that was covered rises to the surface over and over and over on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. And so Yeah, we try to avoid any kind of bad publicity.
That makes total sense to me. So we've been spending a great deal of time and an enjoyable afternoon speaking with Dean Travellino, the co-founder of the firm Travellino Keller, a great boutique firm established in 2003 and one recognized for strategic thinking and creative programming. And we've also spent some time talking with Alan Schaefer, the founder of Banding People Together. It's a music-based experiential learning program that enhances collaboration through the unique bonding process of songwriting. And last but certainly not least, we've spent some great conversation with Belinda Hernandez, an Emmy Award-winning journalist and current student at the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. So actually, my final question, I think we've gotten to the point now where we've had a great time, but I know that y'all are very busy. And I appreciate you taking out a little time to share with us in a learning community. So my final question for each of you, and your answer to this question will be posted on our blog. So which business book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Good question. For me, and I'm lucky because I still have to read X number of books through the program. And one early on in the program that jumped out at me was The Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, I believe is his name.
That's him.
And you touched on a couple things in there and some of the characteristics of communication, collaboration. But the thing that jumped out at me was trust, the issue of trust. If you don't have trust, you're not going to have a functioning team.
Very good. So, Dean?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of jump off the reservation a little bit on that because I'm not a huge fan of business books. I mean, I think there's some great ones out there. You know, I'm a big fan of people like Michael Lewis and you know, books like Tipping Point and things like that. We've got a program at the firm called Read the Lead, and it's all about, you know, it's got business books in there, but it's got books that are more, you know, that are broader. There's biographies or things like that. You know, Unbroken is a book, Laura Hillebrandt, that I read a little while back, that had such an impact on me. It's such an amazing book about, you know, a true story. I love stuff that is real about this guy, Tony Zamperini, who, as far as I know, at age 96 is still living. Hmm. And, you know, it's all about adversity. There's a little bit in there about him being a runner, and he had the potential to be the first man to break the 4-minute mile, but he went off the war and he was unable to do that. But his story and dealing with adversity to me is such a great thing to learn from a business standpoint because we face adversity every single day. Some of it's very small scale, mm-hmm. but it, you know, in the time of being stressed out, you know, it's enough to kind of break you for at least a period. And then sometimes we're facing larger adversity or our clients are. And so, you know, I encourage everyone to read Unbroken because I think you'll get a lot out of it that you can apply to business.
Thank you. Alan?
Definitely, without question, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. That is the book that that woke me up and put me on the path. And I'm pretty confident that I wouldn't be here talking about any of this stuff if it hadn't been for that book. And it made me realize immediately that while I thought our band, you know, our band was not like a lot of the other bands because we didn't have this crazy, like, hey, here's fights and people on drugs and all the cliched stuff, but we had this under the surface dysfunction. And when I read the book, I realized why we achieved so much, and I'm so proud of what we accomplished together, why there was absolutely a ceiling in terms of how far we could go together.
Interesting. And did I ask you what was the name of the band?
Oh, the band's called Five Star Iris. And I still play. Yeah, we're still out there. We're on iTunes, and we had the honor and privilege of playing in 15 countries for the troops. We played in Iraq during the war, and all kinds of stuff. So it's been an interesting ride, to say the least.
Well, incredible. I'm glad I remembered to ask you that. So, Alan, Belinda, and Dean, on behalf of our learning community, it's been a great honor and a distinct pleasure to have you all joining us on the show today to share your thoughts, your expertise, and certainly your passions with us. And so I'd love to have you back on the show sometime if we can work out the schedules. Is it a deal?
Sure.
Deal.
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely.
I've got you on tape, so
if
you can't change
it. It's not Super Bowl
that.
Sunday.
Not Super Bowl. Oh, it definitely won't be on the
not
Sunday.
Super Bowl.
You don't have to worry about the Saints.
Well, this is true. Not this year. That's right. I'll take the first round draft pick.
I'm a Rams fan. I got nothing.
No worries, right?
I love it. I love it. So with that in mind, could each of you tell us how our learning community can contact you, either by email address and phone, perhaps?
Sure. You can go to belinda.hernandez@yahoo.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Hernandez Nola, N-O-L-A, or Facebook.
Dean Trevolino, dtrevolino@trevolinokeller. And www.trevolinokeller.com.
And you can find me at Alan, A-L-A-N, at bandingpeopletogether.com, or Alan at 5stariris.com. That's the band address. And if you want to learn more, www.bandingpeopletogether.com.
Well, very good. We'll actually be posting this on our blog. So with that response, we'll be bringing this edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. We invite you to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. And also remember, please, please, please remember to drop me a line at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have any recommendations for guests. I've enjoyed having your recommendations and having that play out on the radio show. It's worked out very well. So join us again at this same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.